This is The Beautiful Game.
Is this real play? Yes, it is! That's what they came to see! The name is Messi.
Vinicius Junior is in here, and it's two.
Modric. Now he'll unleash one! Sensational goal!
Mbappe, Griezmann, Pogba! It is France. It will be some can-can on the Champs-Élysées tonight.
So we'll hook that cross in. Pulisic! Oh, lovely hat-trick! What a night!
On today's beautiful game, we've got group play. This is The Beautiful Game, episode number 3, a special edition of The Beautiful Game because a special day for Team USA, the men's national team, advancing the 1-0 victory over Iran. Captain America himself, Christian Pulisic, providing the difference. However, he did pick up a bit of an injury here, something we need to keep monitoring as we approach the Netherlands, the Orange waiting for us on Saturday. So, without further ado, Group B, Group A, they are set. They have moved on. England and the U.S. move on from Group B, while Iran and Wales are eliminated, both losing earlier today, while the Netherlands and Senegal come out of Group A, Ecuador and the host nation Qatar eliminated. The knockout round is set up where the 16 remaining teams, the winner of Group A, that is the Dutch, take on the second place team from Group B, that is the United States, while England and Senegal face off. We've got the rest of the week to determine who moves on to the knockout stage. So while the United States doesn't have to pack their bags just yet, the scare, Christian Pulisic in that 38th minute, putting his body on the line, making the ultimate sacrifice, picking up the injury and ultimately getting subbed out at halftime. But it was all the difference the U.S. needed for that 1-0 victory. Checking in the latest from the team doctors, you saw it, I saw it. He put his crown jewels on the line, let's say, taking a knee from the Iranian goalkeeper. But the team doctors are calling it a pelvic contusion. I guess that is the scientific term we're going to go with. And clearly, after getting subbed at halftime, Team USA definitely lost some of their punch in the attack. He struggled, Christian Pulisic, that is, finding his delicate touch early on in this game, mishandling a number of balls in his direction. No pun intended, I promise, I swear. But found himself on the end of a Sergiño Dest cross to convert the goal. Sergiño Dest and Anthony Robinson are fullbacks, were the absolute heartbeat of the team. You're asking them not only to prevent Iran from scoring, but they were flying up and down the pitch, making sure we had as many opportunities as possible in the attack because we were desperate to score. The United States needed a goal, otherwise they were going to be sent packing. And a large part of that was how Greg Berhalter reverted to the same formation he had in the first match against Wales, the 4-1-2-3 formation with Tyler Adams, the engine of our midfield, on his own in the central defensive midfield position, while Pulisic was out on the wing, just like we expected, opposite Josh Sargent and Tim Weah. As for Pulisic, we're waiting with bated breath in terms of if he can play for Saturday. He tweeted post-match that he would be ready for the Dutch, while Weston McKennie relayed his texts with the man they call Captain America, saying we should be expecting him. I had urged Greg Berhalter to make substitutions, and Pulisic was the one you didn't want to see, but Brendan Aaronson was the logical choice to start the second half as Pulisic was taken to the hospital postgame, and that was pretty much all that Berhalter had gotten right as far as his second half adjustments are concerned. What I was scared of, what I implored the U.S. manager to do, was to go and win this game. In the first half, they did that. In the second half, they played scared yet again. And the reason why they lost the lead to Wales, the reason why they lost the lead to Ghana in 2014, it's all the same. Content with doing the bare minimum of getting the job done without allowing your athletes, without allowing your superior players to go out and do what they do best. I think Berhalter put it perfectly post-game. He said that the U.S. executed soccer-wise to the best of their abilities in the first half, while the second half was executing determination-wise. Why can't they just play the best soccer in both halves? Why do we have to have this tough and grit because we can hold off the Iranian offense? No. Those second half substitutions and Walker Zimmerman coming in along with Shaq Moore to give us five defensemen, parking the bus was embarrassing. Watching Serginho Dest coming off the field and putting Walker Zimmerman and Shaq Moore in was just laughable, frankly. I don't understand what it is being comfortable with Iran coming with so much pressure, with obviously one goal making all the difference. There was a great clearance by Anthony Robinson that found the foot of Brendan Aaronson, and in a matter of seconds, the best opportunity we had all second half was on a broken play because Aaronson was able to beat his man one-on-one. I don't understand why we felt the need to sit back and wait for Iran to continue to put pressure on us when the U.S. was the better team. They were. So why won't their manager allow them to be the better team? I will say, though, one positive thing about Greg Berhalter. You got to give him credit for starting Cameron Carter-Vickers. It was his first start of the World Cup, and he's actually never played alongside Tim Ream before. Ream, once again, outstanding, old enough to be my dad, kind of, sort of. And Carter-Vickers was good enough to make sure that Iran's attack was held scoreless. The U.S. was able to take advantage of a surprisingly passive Iran to start this game, and it continued throughout the second half. So Berhalter essentially tying some of the best players that we've had in U.S. men's soccer history with one hand behind their back is just something that hopefully dissipates when we get to the knockout round. But I digress. There's only so much grief you can give a manager who has piloted his team into the knockout round. I mentioned Carter-Vickers because with his addition to the starting 11, that lineup was significant for the future of U.S. soccer in two ways. He contributed to the youngest starting 11 in the World Cup so far. That's right, the U.S. with an average age just over 24 years old. No other country has a younger lineup at this particular moment than we do. And for all of you saying that the MLS isn't good enough for developing talent, that it's not a sustainable league, you know what? You're absolutely right. But this U.S. men's national team, the second time in its history, there were zero MLS players in the starting lineup. It's incredible to see what kind of progress this team has made on the backs of their players, like a Christian Pulisic, like a Tim Weah, like a Yunus Musa, who, by the way, turned 20 years old today. Happy birthday, Yunus Musa. You played an outstanding job in the midfield, which he needs to do, along with everyone else, if we want to send the best version the U.S. team has up against the Netherlands on Saturday. Now, I mentioned in the previous episode that these teams kind of mirror each other one way or another. They both failed to qualify for the World Cup 4 years ago, and with that time off, on the world's biggest stage, they have a new generation of young star players replacing the old guard that, in the Netherlands' case, was actually very productive, very successful. They have a tradition quite like the Buffalo Bills in terms of their World Cup performances. They finished second in 2010, third in 2014, and they may even be better now than when they were with their golden generation of Robin van Persie and Wesley Sneijder and Iron Robin and many, many more. I expected Cody Gapko, the first player that I mentioned by name on this Beautiful Game podcast, to step up, and not only has he done that, he scored in all three of the Dutch matches so far, while shout out one holdover from the old guard, one of those great Dutch players from years ago, Memphis Depay, who made a strong impact in his first start for this 2022 World Cup in Qatar. In the 2-0 victory over Qatar, the host nation, Klaassen found both Gapko and Frankie de Jong, and apparently for their fan base, it still wasn't good enough. The Dutch skipper Louis van Gaal is still receiving criticism for what fans have called, quote, a boring brand of football. Because when you're up against a nation like Qatar, when you're up against Ecuador and Senegal in Group A, apparently the expectation is you score a lot more goals than they had. The Dutch are as motivated as ever, And with the ball control that their midfield possesses and that stifling defense I mentioned in episode one, we've seen Jurrien Timber take over into the starting lineup. Virgil van Dijk is still one of the best center backs in the world. It's going to be the toughest challenge the U.S. has had, period. This defense, this midfield, is much better than what they saw in England. And yet, U.S. still didn't score on the Three Lions. And by the way, this is a fan base that is criticizing their national team for only scoring 5 goals. 5 goals in their 3 group play matches, and the U.S. has 2. It's going to be very difficult to overcome a great Dutch team, but when you see those moments of glory, when you see what Serginho Dest and Christian Pulisic and Brendan Aaronson in the second half, Anthony Robinson, what those guys can do when they take somebody on one-on-one, magic can happen, and anybody can win in this field. And the U.S.'s chance is as good as any against the Dutch. It just needs to happen with better set-piece play. That was still a disaster with Christian Pulisic's low, screaming corner kicks. And they need to play hungry. The knockout stage is great, but as I said before, it's still part of the journey. It's not the destination. This team is much better than what we've seen in previous World Cups. And now's the time, not 4 years from now, now is the time that they can go toe-to-toe with the great European powers like the Netherlands, like England before them. So I'm excited to see what we can do for Saturday. But in the meantime, the rest of group play will find itself 2 teams from each group of 4. Group C tomorrow, Poland and Argentina, plus Saudi Arabia and Mexico. Argentina, straight up, they lose, they go home. It's shocking to be in that position 2 games through. That Saudi Arabia loss looms large, while the Saudis will play Mexico, who still haven't scored a goal yet in this World Cup. Group D, meanwhile, looks just like what Group B was at the beginning of this day. Australia is in the driver's seat here. They advance with a draw against Denmark, while the Danes are in the same position the U.S. was. They win, they get in. Meanwhile, France has already clinched, so Tunisia could get in as well if they shock the French, if they're just looking to get themselves ready for the knockout stage. But that just seems quite unlikely to happen. So we've got more group play to come, you've got more beautiful game to come, and ahead of Saturday's slate against the Dutch, it is a great time to be a supporter of the U.S. national team, and it is a great time to be here with me, Alex Hardy, for the beautiful game, right here, wherever you get your podcast.